Real life stories of real life men. These are the many voices of the Brothers in Blue Reentry Program. Real voices. What were you like as a person before your incarceration?
I partied. I liked to drink. I liked women a lot. And that's how I spent a lot of my time, was drinking with, a lot of women, a lot of friends. Spent a lot of time on the rivers, at the lakes. Kind of just living pretty carefree.
Have you been in trouble before?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Started out as a juvenile going to a detention center and residential living areas, and then graduated from that to county jail, rehabs, to correctional boot camp, and now in prison.
Welcome to this week's edition of Real Voices. This recording is one inmate sitting down to interview his fellow inmate. Ask our frank questions in want of real answers. Nothing sugarcoated, but at essence, real dialogue in hopes of glimpsing a moment in the life of one. His reality, his life, right or wrong, his story. This recording is meant for mature audiences only. The only editing done to this recording was to clarify statements or omit extraneous information that didn't serve the purpose of this recording, which is simply to offer vignettes of a life. Thank you for listening to Real Voices. Sentenced to 32 months for aggravated battery, our interviewee had finally made it to the big house, as prison is known to some. This 28-year-old man entered prison nearly 2 years ago, frightened and alone, cut off from friends and family, leaving behind a week-old baby girl he had recently fathered. He left just about everything that defined who he was as a person. Little did he know, however, that a new identity soon awaited him behind penitentiary walls. Can you tell us a little bit about what your first night in prison was like?
I slept with all my clothes on.
Were you scared?
I was nervous a little bit. When I walked in with my bedroll and clothes and stuff to the cell, it was a 5-man cell in Hutchison behind the walls, and the guard is all the way down at the end of the run, opening the door from a lockbox, and I'm carrying my stuff in, and everybody in there is tattooing or smoking. It was going on like it was going out of style. And what was weird is there's a camera pointed directly into the cell. Mm-hmm. Later you start noticing that that's just a lot of stuff to watch at one time, so a lot of stuff gets overlooked and stuff. So anyway, I go in and I put my bedroll down on my bed, and I'm thinking, all right, these guys in here, every one of them except one's bigger than me. And I'm thinking the first thing I have to do when I come here is fight. Mm-hmm. This is what people told me, it was things divided by race, just as soon as you get there, find the biggest guy and just hit him. Anyway, I put my stuff down on the bed, the only bed available, and I look at this great big dude tattooing this other pretty good sized dude, mm-hmm. And I look at what he's putting on him. He's putting on like a battle axe or something, and I was like, "What's up, guys?" Yeah. And they just looked at me with the meanest cold faces, and said nothing to me, just went back to tattooing. And, I didn't say much to them for a couple of days. They didn't really say too much to me. When it ended, we were all pretty close.
Mm-hmm. How did you connect with them?
They were all white. You know, when it first came down, I was really angry. I ended up, you know, getting tattooed a little bit, getting high. Kind of felt obligated to click up with a particular group of white people. And I did that for a while. And what I was doing wasn't, it wasn't sitting right with me as far as the long run goes to raise a family with that particular group.
Let me ask you this. I know that individuals coming into prison, especially people who've never been to prison before, they come in with certain expectations. They feel like you have to click up or join a certain organization in order to feel safe and protected. And there's also that sense of belonging. Do you felt like that you joined that particular group in order to feel safe or in order to feel as if you belong to something?
Yeah, most definitely so. And that was a lot of it. No, the camaraderie was awesome. When you walk around prison, it made you feel like you could walk with your head high and feel like you were somebody, that you belonged to something more powerful than just the guy standing next to you by himself, you know. Even though you may stand there by yourself, they know and you know that you've got a lot of people with you. I liked the idea that some people feared it. It was very intriguing, and I bought into it big time. I seen where this was going to start leading, and it was only going to lead me probably to spend the rest of my life in prison or to keep coming back.
Okay, so when you left that group of individuals, was there any type of consequences?
They were, for the most part, seemed okay with it because they, you know, they wanted me to better myself and stuff. And but there were times before that where I tried to separate myself from that before I had become, you know, a full member. And, that was almost impossible, it seemed like.
Well, what made it impossible?
The guilt that they would put on you, the kind of the undertones or remarks that, you know, it's not really something that you can do once you go so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about how, do you feel like certain traps are set for people who come into prison young, isolated?
You could call it a trap, for sure. Yeah, people who have been here a while and they have, you know, their own thing going on, they definitely look for people, you know. They look for people who are going to be threats. They look for people who are going to be useful. They look for people they can get over on, people they can get information out of. I mean, everybody in here is a scout of some sort, whether it be for somebody else's motives or your own.
Mm-hmm.
You're always paying attention and looking to see what's going on or what's going to come of somebody.
So then you hear about this program, Brothers in Blue Reentry, and you decide that this is something that you want to participate in. This is something that you feel would benefit you as an individual and as well as your family by you joining this program. So what were some of the sacrifices you had to make in order to leave the prison you were at, the group of men that you were at, in order to come into this program, something that was unknown to you?
Sacrifices that I made was, I was already established somewhere. I could have done some pretty easy time there. They were really solid dudes, a lot of them. Not all of them, but most of them. And it was hard to leave, you know. I mean, I felt really bad. I felt guilty. I still do most of the time. The one thing that helps that is the approval of my family. You know, if they didn't really care one way or the other, it'd be different. But they do care. You know, their support there that helps me justify it you know, I can say I'm doing the right thing or giving it a really good shot, you know.
Justifying you staying in this program?
Right. Mm-hmm. Leaving, coming, and staying. Mm-hmm. So
how's your family, what kind of contact have you had with your family since being in the program?
I have a visit from my fiance and my daughter every other weekend.
Mm-hmm. Have they come to any of the BIBR functions, like picnics and banquets?
Yes, they came to the Christmas banquet, and hopefully will be here for the spring banquet.
Twice a year, Brothers in Blue Reentry hosts a spring picnic during the month of May and a Christmas banquet for program members and their families to work towards restoring broken relationships. This is a real opportunity to demonstrate changed lives. For some men, this is the first time they have seen their loved ones in years. And some families who had written off their father, son, or brother to a life in prison have attended these BIBR events only to embrace their changed father, son, or brother. That's the power of restoration. Okay, our guy has made some significant changes in his life. His family has witnessed firsthand the dramatic turnaround. His anger is subdued. His courage to take back his identity is increasing. He wants something more for his life. How did he get this way? BIBR offers a wide array of classes that seek to get at the heart of what brought most of us to prison originally. Classes such as anger management, search for significance, and thinking for a change, reach into the hearts and minds of the men in the program, transforming them from the inside out. Thinking for a change, that's one of the courses that they provide at Brothers in Blue Reentry. How has your experience been in that particular class?
You know, we do something that we call a cost-benefit analysis sheet.
All right. Here's how it works. I will give you a for instance. Let's say someone cuts in front of you in the chow line, which happens frequently around here. What are you going to do about it? A. Sock the guy. B. Protest. Or C. Just accept the fact that you got cut. While more possibilities are possible, for the sake of time, those are the choices. Each action represents a consequence. A. Hit and go back to the hole. B. Take the chance that the guy may not like the sound of your voice, or C, get your meal one tray later. Food service is serving the same meal anyway. That's the cost-benefit analysis in a nutshell. It works.
It's really easy to almost get in a fight in here. Cost-benefit on that, you could, to make this short, you could go to the guy that upset you and call him to the showers, which I have done.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, really...
Because there's no cameras or anything back there.
Right. Well, I mean, if it was really bad enough, you could have just done it right then and there and get over it.
Right.
But who wants to go to the hole when you can get something off, right?
Right.
So anyway, you could go in there, but you could also... Here's the bad part about it. This guy could whoop you. He could leave you there. You could hit your head. Everything in this place is cement or, mm-hmm. or brick, you know. What do you got to gain from it? Nothing.
Right.
You have nothing to gain from it. No matter what anybody in here tells you, you have nothing to gain from it.
What has been your overall experience in this program?
I got a GED, finally. I've been trying to get that for years on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And boot camp, you know. Was never able to find the help or the support to do that, and I found it here.
Mm-hmm.
Got it on my first try. Here in Brothers in Blue, you have an inmate-ran GED department. And that might sound like it's a bad idea at first, but these people in Brothers in Blue that work in the GED department either started out getting their GED or already had their GED.
The GED classes are inmate-led. It's guys in the program helping other men achieve success in their lives. Actually, it's a good idea because... who better to guide others to the educational promised land than those who tread the same path? And there is no room for cheating either. Brothers in Blue Reentry partners with a state agency who administers and grades the official GED test. Brothers in Blue Reentry is required to pay an $85 fee for each test administered. A portion of donations received is thus used towards the funding of the GED program.
We're all trying to do good here, and you know, they want to see you succeed as much as they want to succeed, and that's what really helps, because they will take the time to sit down and break things down for you so that you'll understand. They'll strip you all the way back to the basics if they have to. I've seen it done. If you have a language barrier, there's help here for that. You know, there's a lot of resources in that GED department that are so beneficial. And it's not that they don't have that on the streets. It's just the way that they use them here. Mm-hmm. You know, they use it to their advantage on a very serious note. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't, it's just a really good thing.
Well, so how did you feel when you got your results back?
Man, I was, you know, honestly, I don't think, I feel like personally I shouldn't have. I told God, I said, you know, this is going to be our first real thing between you and me. And I said, you have my hand in this test. I said, I can only do so much. The rest is, I mean, he does everything. He can, you know, he does. He allows us to do what we do. And I told him, I remember this so well. I said, you have my hand in this test. Just, if it's not your will for me to pass, I will keep studying. If it is, so be it. And I went in calm, peaceful. I wasn't really worried. I got my GED, pretty good scores. You know, it's really good to see people learning, because a lot of guys that get their GED, like myself included, you know, went to work up there and helped, you know, a few other people obtain their GEDs.
So what was that like, getting your GED and then turning around and giving back for other individuals to be able to get their GED?
It felt good.
So what's your plans for when you release?
Obviously go and take care of my family. And I plan on joining a church. I have a mentor now. That is a really important thing, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see where it goes.
Why do you think it's important to having a mentor?
Well, a mentor is somebody you can trust. If you needed a ride to a job interview, if you needed someone just to talk to about a situation at home or work, it's somebody who's on your side, you know? And they're there to help you wherever they can.
How does that process work, you getting a mentor?
You fill out an application. You know, your age, your birth date, some other necessary information. You kind of give a paragraph or so about yourself, and then they try to match you with somebody who they feel is going to be beneficial to your success upon release. And in this case, I have an interest in particular fields like farming and agriculture. Is my mentor is a he's a mature male. You know, he's lived life. He's successful in his trade. Somebody you can confide in. You say, hey, I'm having this problem. What should I do? What advice can you give me? They lead by example here. And, you know, the mentors, they lead by example. The volunteers, they lead by example. The staff leads by example. We follow them. You know, they're leading us into rehabilitation. I'm really not too worried about coming back to prison. I mean, there's always that thought, you know, I got to keep myself in check in certain areas. But I can do that because I've built character in a positive way, and I've learned prevention. I've learned what to do to prevent things from happening. And I think that's really important.
Our interviewee is now in his third quarter of classes in the program. He regularly meets with his mentor on Mondays. He's growing. He reads voraciously, devouring books authored to help one mature mentally and spiritually. He is thinking for a change, and it only cost him his old life. But the benefit of giving up that negative way of thinking has benefited him tremendously. He has found a new identity from the one he hid behind upon first entering prison. His goal now is to be a good father, a dynamic husband, and a productive, law-abiding citizen upon release. Brothers in Blue Reentry Program attempts to turn men around in the direction they should go, a direction that leads to changed thinking, changed behavior, and ultimately, changed lives. We reach men while they are still incarcerated in their rock-bottom state of mind and set them on the right track. In this program, many lives are impacted by relationships built with mentors and volunteers that come into the prison, speaking wisdom, hope, and guidance into the minds and hearts of the men in the program. So what's the connection to you, Brothers in Blue Reentry? Because what happens in prison matters. It matters that change must happen, and we need your help to ensure that it does. Thank you for listening to Real Voices. Please tune in next week.